Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello, friends.
Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Ahoy, ahoy.
Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Oh, that's me. Hello.
The way you'll know the order of who I'm going to call is whoever takes a drink first. Justin took a swig. I'm like, I'm going to call him, but he was too fast. It's too fast.
Well, and the second level of this chess game is knowing to fake out, act like you're drinking, and to be like, oh, good.
I know. And then Brian spits out a bunch of confetti and says his name perfectly.
So I'm gonna start off by like, well, my Friday night, okay?
Yes.
Friday night for me is 15 minutes before the show's airing. My girlfriend goes over and sits down on the couch in front of the TV.
For the uninitiated, we're talking about Andrew Main, Ghost Diver, one of the very few named your first name in the name itself of the episode.
Because I have so much global brand name recognition.
You do now, man. Congratulations.
As seen on CNET, the New York Post, TMZ, Fox News, Drudge Report.
Yes, all true. So she's sitting down, ready to watch, and she's like, oh, what are you going to watch? I'm like, we don't have cable. And I get a look like, you mean we're not going to be able to watch the thing you made? And I'm like, yeah, we saw a rough cut a while ago. And then I'm like, maybe I need to fix this right now. And so I went and signed us up for YouTube TV,
yep,
which had Discovery Channel. We're able to play it and watch it. But I'm like, man, you know, I was just. Zed friend's like, oh, you're going to do a watch party? I'm like, no. And this is not me. But I'm like, but I will be on Twitter, because what I do want to do is I want to engage with people, you know, as the thing's there, because I've been telling, you know, fans and friends and stuff like, hey, check it out. So I hopped on, you know, I tweeted during before, and then about like 5 minutes before it aired, I'm like, hey, I'm going to be on Twitter answering your questions and stuff, you know, and if you have questions, let me know. And I'm just going to be live tweeting. So that's what I did. I just live tweeted the special as it was going on. And my plan was just to sort of live tweet it blind without, you know, knowing what's on camera. But it was fun. It was a really, really, really fun way to engage. And as I did this, I would, of course, you know, go check other reactions and other stuff for it. And here's the thing. I've been on Twitter, like Justin and Brian, for over a decade, okay? We've all been involved pre-YouTube and other forms of online engagement and stuff. So I would say that our skins are a lot thicker than other people who do things publicly. And we know, hey, if you get 70% I like what you're doing and 30% I don't like what you're doing, that's great. That's a wonderful day. That's great, you know? Or if you're doing something really different and weird and you're getting 70 or 80%, this is horrible, but you get, you know, 10% like, no, this is actually cool. Great. Some people like it. Some people get it. And I think that's kind of where we come from, is sort of this idea of, we know not everybody's going to like, you can't like everything. You know, you see like, oh, you know, 70% of people don't like Britney Spears. 30% do. In her heyday, that was a lot of albums. You know, that was great, you know, and some of the things you love the most. So I think that's the healthy attitude, is you go into it going that, and you know, when you do anything publicly, you know, you hop on a Periscope stream or a live stream or a Twitch stream, you're going to find out very quickly, you know, wow, there's some, you know, there are people who just are offering you an opinion. They don't like, you know, what you are, or what you look, or what you're doing. And that's going to happen. And you get just really trollish people, whatever. And sometimes people point out things that are true or whatever. They're like, oh yeah, no, you know, I did stumble through that, or I didn't prepare or whatever. But anyhow, point is, I go into the doing that. So I had an awesome night Friday, and I had, you know, a lot of people loved it. couple people were like, what is this idiot doing? You know, this is dumb, whatever. And that's fine. That's what I want because I'm trying to do something different. So
the magic phrase for those people is sounds like it wasn't for you. End of discussion.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. I was, to be honest with you, I was preparing for a more negative reaction.
Yeah. I think we can get into that since it was super well received, which is great. And by the way, also the people that are going to say, hey, this is weird or whatever, I don't like this, that comes with the platform.
Yep.
Like part of being on a gigantic, super anticipated, highly branded thing. And Shark Week is always offered a diversity of content. Some people like a certain version of it. Some people like another kind of version of it. This was obviously not like either of those. This was very much its own thing, which is great. But going into it, I know that you were a little trepidatious because this
the reason is because whenever you're doing something involving sharks, which are threatened species, they're endangered and they're facing a threat from the environment and what have you, and people in perception of this. There are people who, there are a lot of shark advocates out there among myself and people I work with, but there are other people who are nervous of this. And watching, you know, this guy do this weird sort of thing around these creatures, there is this, hey, what is this really about? And also my fear was like, I didn't want people thinking that like I'm instructing divers on how to protect yourself, because
no.
I want to be very clear. We don't know fully what worked, what didn't work. And I made the argument like camouflage may not be the right idea, because in some cases you want the sharks to know you're there. You just want them to stay clear of you and whatnot. There was a lot of things that were like, we tried to address those as much as we can. And, you know, the actual 40 minutes of airtime to try to explain this. So that was a big part of my fear, is the misunderstanding of it. And that's why I went and like did CNET and I did this sort of more detailed thing. And I've tried to be out there like, this is what it is, this is what it's not. And, you know, and we'll see. There may be more follow through on what will happen. You know, other people might be like, this is horrible, you're evil, whatever. May happen. But anyhow, but my point I wanted to get at was I could, you know, for there weren't anywhere as many areas as I thought, but there were, you know, negative comments. And it's like, it's fine. Whenever you're doing on a big platform, that's fine. The, you know, the challenge, of course, though, is that like the internet can be, sometimes you see the worst of people though. And I didn't see that. But sometimes you see things and you realize sometimes these people are just impulsively tweeting, they're saying something, sometimes they're not. You know, I get people who just find errors in a book and will tweet at me like, Andrew Main, your books, you know, you have all these punctuation errors and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, yeah, this is true. And it's fine. You can say that. But it's like, you're like, I don't think they realize that they come across as mean in that sense, you know. Sometimes people do realize they're being mean. And that's just sort of kind of wanted to open this up, because we live, like for us, we live so much of our life in public and stuff, you know. Like, you know, I'm more private than I think you guys are by, you know, one, just by the amount of time I spend less time in front of people, but you guys are much more open and out there with stuff. And I think that, and I've seen with you guys in particular, you know, people forget you're real people.
I got to tell you, like I've worked, we've talked about this on the show. I've worked really hard to make, especially knowing that the YouTube platform had been, you know, for what, 11 years now, for the majority of that, it wasn't entirely mind and control. That incentivized me to really double down on expanding the Twitter platform or whatever. But it's interesting because now the Twitter platform has gotten big enough that quite literally I can't seem to say anything. If I say anything interesting, full stop, then there's gonna be somebody who wants to make a project out of trying to get my goat. And and I don't know what the right responses are, because the right responses in a performance stand situation are you deal with a heckler either by shutting them down or diverting their energy and making them a fan, giving them a job. There's all these things you can do. But in this I don't know, drive-by shouting out the window culture on Twitter, it's a little bit more challenging. I took a break from Twitter for a week because a friend of mine passed away, and so I was like, I'm going to unplug for a bit. And when I came back after 5 days, it was to tweet out a photograph I found to be a fairly beige platitude written on the side of a taco truck about like, hey man, you only got so much time in your life. Don't do something you hate for a living. Get out there and you know, make a dent in the universe or whatever. I if anything, my hesitation before I hit send was that it was too traditional, too cutesy. Might as well, you know, cross stitch it and hang it up in the kitchen. And instead, I got this white privilege, oh, it must be easy for you. Some of us have to work jobs we hate. And I was like, all right, I don't even. So I and what's funny is, all of the.
Yeah, boys.
No. I don't know what the right response is when your platform gets big enough that you're not just like honesty certainly matters for the platform, but at some level you're also representing a brand and an ideal, and weirdly, like the number one riskiest thing you can do if you're concerned about losing Twitter followers, the riskiest thing you could do is tweet. And that is what I'm wrestling with, is because if what I care about is keeping all the Twitter followers, and same thing goes for YouTube. YouTube is the same platform where every single time we launch a new episode, we immediately lose subscribers. I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is or the right way to interpret it, except for like, I know that on a personal level, I've trained myself to, we've talked about this before, read the words and then say, you don't mean that. and then say, what you really mean is you had a bad day and you want attention. Let's figure out a way to give you your attention, I guess.
But I mean, I don't know. Maybe this is trying to cut it too dry, but like, don't engage. Like I am trying to like not engage with that stuff. I certainly don't get as much of it as you, but I know that there are just some people online.
You don't get that kind of vile engagement on your dirty sixpence none the richer tweets.
Okay, so that was mostly you. So, but you know, like whether it's dealing with like spammers in the Discord or just people on Twitter, where you know, trying to pick a fight or, you know, disagreeing, but in a kind of hostile way, like, so you don't just like you're it's different than like being on stage and there's a heckler, or even, you know, you get the phone call and it's the kid who wants your time. Like that barrier is like infinitely more high than someone sending a tweet. And so to give all someone right. attention and your emotional energy
and
that,
I think
that makes you upset. Like you gotta shut it off. You can't even give it the time of day. Mute them and go, like, don't block them. Mute them and just go about your day.
I think that there is kind of two folds to it, mm-hmm. where number one, there's the like, okay, well, is this good for Brian the man? Right? Like, is this whatever endorphins kind of come in from knowing that people like what you do? Or you know, bad feelings that come from people saying that they hate what you do, or something else mean. Like that's one question. The second question is, what's good for Brian Brushwood the brand, right? What's good for Andrew Main the brand? What's good for Justin Robert Young the brand? And I think from Brian's perspective, I can certainly see where you have this like calculus in your head where you're like, well, look, if I can't just turn into like the most bland platitude guy, like if I can't just be like The Rock, like, you know, it's 6 a.m. rise and grind, I'm clanging and banging, like then what am I doing on this website? Because
yeah, and saying he, you know, he got heat last week because he made a comment about, you know, Prime Minister Boris Johnson, you know, sharing the last name, like, oh, my congratulations to my cousin. You know, joking, congratulating the now, you know, head of state of the United Kingdom. Outrage, because, you know, he's a Tory, you know, and it was just this yelling at him for a polite congratulations to somebody who got, you know, put into this position. And it's like, holy cow, like that's why you see why he tries to keep his brand as middle of the road as possible, because he wants, you know, wants to appeal to everybody.
He wants everybody to go see Hobbs and Shaw in theaters right now and have no reservations that you are supporting the career of Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Yeah, and look, from my perspective, like, you know, we've had the last few weeks as the 2020 election has kind of gotten up to speed. We've had really good download months for politics, politics, politics. I would hope and expect that it continues to go. But with it, man, does it come with a creeping anxiety for me that, like, the more people listen and the more it gets plugged into the larger world of political discussion, I know I'm going to run afoul of, certainly more people and certainly more possibly even personalities for which conflict is the currency. And I very deliberately tried to keep my brand to be something where, like, hey, look, I'm here to be the referee, so you can yell that the referee's judgment is wrong, but that's where I'm coming from. But I know that that doesn't save me. Like, I'm like an erstwhile ghost diver. This is there for camouflage, but I know that as soon as somebody comes for me, it will save me in no way. And it's part of why I've tried to reevaluate why I want to be on Twitter and what I want to say when I'm there, because some platforms I really want to show my personal life and others I don't. And in fact, like, these days, I don't know if I want to do it at all. Like, I don't know if I want to talk about when I'm happy and when I'm sad or what makes me happy. Like, if anything, like, I always want to shout out my friends. Like, I was very happy the day of the Ghost Diver thing while I was on my way to Gen Con to do it. And in retrospect, I kind of even feel worse that I was given a talk at the same time. I couldn't do more. But beyond that, like, I don't know what the point of that of social media beyond branding is for me right now. And even then, like, I don't know what Justin the Man gets out of it. I know Justin Robert Young, the brand, gets more awareness that my podcast is available on all streaming platforms and you should go listen to it. And this is what you're going to get. But, and anything that feeds into that. Oh, and trolling Bryce.
And trolling me on Twitter.
Like, but other than that, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know how much access I want to give to people.
That's worth thinking about is like, I know for me, Twitter is, I want to share fun things. You know, I'm going to tell you things I like. Rarely I might be like, it wasn't, but almost never. Like, I'm trying to think like when I've ever like, one, you know, I'm sensitive as a creator and whatever people do, but like, if something's negative, then other people will be out there with it. But I will, if somebody asks me my opinion about what do you think of this movie, whatever, then I'll, you know, direct reply to, I'll reply to them, maybe something about that, not too negative, but I don't ever, if I don't like what somebody's doing, I'm never going to send an at, you know, to a name and tell them they suck or whatever. Cause to me, it's bad manners. It's just bad manners. I don't talk politics because I have this radical thought. I have nothing to say that isn't already out there. And I have nothing to say when it comes to politics that isn't that is insightful, that somebody else hasn't said it more eloquently. And also nobody's following me for politics or those things. You know, it's like, I don't go there, and I don't, you know, I just stay away. Not because, oh, I'm too afraid. I'm like, I don't want to add to the noise. You know, we have enough people like, well, I've got to tell the internet this thing. And it's like, if they know,
they know. I saw a really good tweet a few months back, basically saying, like, isn't it really awful that if you are successful at Twitter is impossible to use?
Yes, yes.
And so, like, from alongside that, because I'm also like I don't even know what I'm doing with Twitter anymore. But the one thing I am trying to do is try to be good noise, or like not necessarily just in terms of only responding, but also replying to the people, you know, that I follow and like putting good stuff out there, right? Like,
yeah.
Oh, that's great. Like even just whether it's small platitudes, whether it's positive, you know, contributions to whatever, I don't know that. What? At least if I'm using it that way, then it feels like I'm actually getting the social out of it and not just trying to have it be this weird branding platform.
How far off do you think we are from Twitter offering plugins such that third-party developers could come in and essentially create free apps where it's like, who do you perceive that you want to project out to the world? Is it somebody generally positive, generally this, that, or whatever? And then you continue to use Twitter however you want, and you get little nudges. Maybe on one hand it'll say, hey, you know, your friend, a bunch of people are talking about, he just had a new project that came out. If you've seen it, would you like to say something positive to him? Dan Trachtenberg, the first episode of The Boys was delightful. Good job directing that. Mm-hmm. And then likewise, maybe you are tweeting and it just does a second switch thing where it's like, according to our algorithms, it looks like you're saying something negative. Are you 100% sure, you know, A, B, or C? Do you want to go now? Do you want to wait 5 minutes and then hit the switch? Or do you want to, you know, rewrite it now? Like,
you know, the sentiment analysis is actually, it's being experimented on. Oh, is Facebook or some other platforms are now putting that in to say, hey, this comes across negative or whatever. And I don't know, you know, I think we could all benefit from maybe knowing, like, hey, this is mean. And I think the part of the problem, though, is like, I mean, we had, you know, two horrific tragedies take place this weekend.
Three.
You know, and there was no people from all points of view were ready to opine on this and tell us what we need to think about this or whatever. And a lot of anger, a lot of finger pointing, a lot of frustration, you know, goes on, which happens, you know, with any kind of event. And I think that a lot of it feels like a lot of people come preloaded, just ready, you know, they're already weapons ready, just waiting for, I'm ready for my target. You know, my target appears, I just want to unload. And I think that's part of the problem, though, is that people have this anger that they're ready to direct. And maybe that would be helpful. You know, I think maybe like, hey, do you want to wait a little while before you scream? Just because once you scream, you can't take back that scream.
I don't think Twitter itself ever does that, or any social, like, for that, them, they don't want people to stop using the service. They don't want to kick people off the service. They want more people to be using it more often. I wouldn't be surprised if there were already marketing firms or you know, that there are tons of like these analytic apps that did something similar to that.
Sure.
But if the platform holders did it, it would be, you would hear all the thought police.
Man, I'll tell you what, man, I would pay for an API that here's what's astonishing to me, and this happened in this case. The person who was taking me to task, you know, shouting white privilege for, you know, saying, hey, maybe don't hate your job. The moment you go looking at their tweets, they, more often than not, you know, you read and it's like, oh, wait, to them, Twitter is a yelling engine. It's their opportunity to rage at the world and just hurl, you know, filled water balloons. Sorry for the language. And then
you mute that person.
Well, exactly. But like, I would love it if there was an API that just showed a troll face where it's like, hey, man, 95 out of the last 100 tweets they had was negative against X, Y, or Z or whatever. And then it's like, okay, well then now I know that they're not even worth responding to or engaging. Like, what they want is attention, and I don't have to give that. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I actually regretted trying to have a sincere conversation with this person. So I don't know.
The other thing you might.
I do. And just to Bryce, your point of view on Brian, I do think that there's a scale to this. Like it is one thing if you are muting a person that's being a butt, right? Or and I've done that periodically. Somebody obviously is just coming at me with bad faith because I got like 30,000 followers, which is more than an average user, but certainly not at the volume that either Andrew or Brian work with. But man, when you get that persistent, like, and this was one of the a very valuable social experiment for me maybe over a year ago. But we had some night attack bit where the stakes were for a week. If I lost, people, I would demand that people call me an embarrassment all week, right? And so that happened. I lost the game, and people started tweeting like, "Oh, that I'm an embarrassment." And literally, like, there was a point where it's like, "Okay, I know it's the bit, right? Mm-hmm. I'm the one who set up the bit. I set up the stakes." And then next thing you know, you just get it, like. And it's like Chinese water torture. There's just some element where it's like the first few days you're like, ah, ha, ha, look at that engagement. Everyone's playing along. This is great. And then you just catch that flinch reaction of like, no,
screw you. Like, I'm living my life. Who are you? Oh, wait, no, they're doing the bit. Doing and the you just don't realize that that's there. And, like, that's the only time that I've experienced something where along the lines of what, you know, Brian and Andrew get just by the numbers, right? So if there's one person who comes out of pocket for me, right, or 0.5 or you know, like 0.25 if people have less followers, then it's like that's 10, 20, 30, maybe 100 sure. people that are just going to launch something that is anywhere between destabilizing in its weirdness, right, or outright hostile. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, like, that is, I mean, that gets into, like, you know, user the person, not user the brand. Like, you're like, oh my God, like, that's kind of sucks. And even if you're muting all of them, like, what happens when you just keep muting and then they just keep showing up? Like, that's almost another, that's another element of psychological, like, okay, am I, this is my life? My life is just keep pushing this troll rock up the hill, only for me
Doubly.
Is the day, and you're like, there's night. There's people who work at night, you know, like they nap during the day.
Which is doubly tough because winning over trolls was the recipe for success for the first 20 years of my career, and it's only now that the scale has changed where it's like I can't save all the starfish.
Well, and also like because you've made a point of saying that you like want to reply to everyone who tweets you, and
I want
you
know, to. I'm letting go of that. I guess that's a big thing, part like, of this.
Yeah, that's your own conviction, and I don't. It doesn't hold. I don't think it holds up even for anybody.
I think it did for a while, but I think I'm evolving beyond it just as a matter of scale.
You know, the week ago, and I don't remember, Elon Musk replied to me on Twitter. Yes, that was me that Elon Musk replied to, everybody. I had, I had a lot of people like that. I got more negative reaction from that, you know, be like, you just got the Bluetooth slapped out. How does it feel? How does it feel to have Elon Musk read my tweet and respond to me? Really good. Next question. But I had some people who are like who are fans of him. But I'm like, most of the people here, they're like me. They're fans of him. And for a moment, they're thinking I'm complaining or whatever. And I would go like, if somebody's replying and mentioning an at reply or whatever, I would go check their Twitter feed. If they were a reasonable person, a funny person, I would make a funny comment back or whatever. And I had several people follow me from that and then say, oh, cool. Friday night, I had a couple people that were like, this is ridiculous or whatever. And I'd write like, and I looked at their Twitter feed. I'm like, oh, this is not like Brian points out. You get the angry tweeter. We're like, oh, this guy has 7 tweets and they're all angry. I'm not going to respond to that person because that's just a whole ball of a problem there. But people have a sense of humor, and I had a couple people I'd be like, yeah, you know, you're right. You know, like I'd be like, what is this idiot thinking? And I'm like, thing going through my mind. And then next thing you know, aha, this was actually great fan. But you can't do that with everybody. And you, I would do it like, oh, sense of humor. They seem they might be cool. But you get to a point where there's just the volume is hard. But you do see like that. The hate accounts, they only exist for people to hate. And, you know, there's the other thing too. It's like, and I'm like, do I do this? And that is a lot of people don't think they're being negative. They think they're being internet cop, you know? And I think we saw some examples of that this weekend. You know, I think a famous astronomer said something and he was trying to be, you know, make a statement that was technically correct.
But like maybe poorly timed.
Maybe not quite the bedside manner that many were expecting.
Kind of ambiguously motivated,
the problem is like you're another voice right now of a bunch of people shouting because we're angry or upset, and you know is that what you want to be? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe we should all be more engaged. I don't know, but I certainly know that like, yeah, if we're trying to police other people, it may not feel like policing to them.
Yeah, and I would say if because this you know this happens at different scales, but everybody gets some form of this, right? Twitter does have some filters in terms of what notifications you can have it give you. So like if you can say like, hey, if they didn't even upload an avatar to the site, don't send mentions to me. Make people verify email addresses or like there are
these
some
heuristics,
quality
right?
There's some quality filter switches in Twitter that you can actually set in your settings. So you know.
Well, that's interesting. Wait, in the default Twitter app, you could say if they never got past the egg stage, they don't exist.
Oh yeah. Wow. So it's under notifications here. So you can do just the general quality filter for quote unquote low quality. But there are also advanced filters, so whether they follow you or not, if they're new, if they have the default profile.
Oh, that's great.
You didn't know about these?
No,
it
no.
is crazy. Well, you should definitely look into these.
You're talking to the guy whose stated goal was to talk to everybody who wanted to talk to him. Yeah. So,
well, of course, Brian, you know, since, and this is just between all of us that are verified here, you can set up that you only see verified responses. You know, so you could only totally filter out the hoi polloi.
Well, I mean, I don't know about, I don't know what you're saying, but I personally like receiving responses from Bryce. I don't know. I don't see what the big deal is.
All right. So, I got your phone number. that's been the other thing with Justin uninstalling Twitter from his phone. Hey, do you still have Twitter uninstalled from your phone?
I do. However, I've become far too lenient on the fact that Twitter also has a mobile browser version.
That's caused me to just text Justin more. And it's like this cool, like, I don't know, just text your friends more. Like I don't know. I'm just saying be good to the world. So.
Yeah. It's hard. And there is a psychological toll to it. But... you know, I don't know. I still believe in it. I still want it to be a good thing. I still enjoy it sometimes. I still like seeing what my friends have to say. But I don't know. I don't know. I don't know that the platform. I mean, here's the dark thought that I had yesterday about this. Like, awful. Among the darkest days that you can think of in terms of tragedy. In many years for me, right? And you know, watching all this unfold on television as I'm trying to make my way back home and I have nothing to do but stare at 24-hour news networks, right? It was like really, 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 really sad. By the metrics, I'm sure it was a banner day for Twitter and for Facebook and for all these other platforms that literally are advertising platforms that only care about volume. Because guess what? It got to be the place where everybody was expressing all of their pain and having all of their fights. And then even, you know, we just mentioned the as yet unnamed astrophysicist who then became the number one trending topic. It birthed its own story, as the platform is wont to do. So now all of a sudden it's a creation engine for more impressions and more ad slots. And it's like, is that like, you know,
good?
Yeah, is that like something that we're like cool? Like, is that when we all understood that, hey, more communication is better, and I still do believe that more communication is better. I think there is a net positive to all these things that we are talking about in general in terms of internet communication. But like that just grossed me out. It just made me feel so disgusting to be like, literally tweeting or liking or retweeting anything is contributing to the idea that at the end of the year, they're going to look at all their traffic throughout it. And there's going to be a big spike on one of the darkest, most horrifying days that I can remember.
And that's partly how I've talked a lot about fake news on Trending Lemon a lot, but just even if you think you're being a counter-narrative force for someone trying to create untrue, quote-unquote, fake news.
Yeah.
If you think that tweeting as actually this is not real, or I can't believe, like contributing even to that counter-narrative still benefits the initial narrative. Like, there's the initial wave and everything after it's going to be sourced to the first one, and there's no stopping it. There's never a counter wave of everyone saying, oh, actually this claim was not real, and more people know about it not being real than being told it was real.
JC Calhoun says, isn't that true for newspapers and TV? No, not really. I mean, like, your ratings are bigger, but you've already sold the ads, right? Like, it's not like there is a larger generation, there's more money that came in on that day because they were able to serve more ads.
I disagree. I think that cable news desperately hopes for exactly the type of tragedy that we just experienced. Something not so bad as 9/11, where you would have to not run ads, but something that you could run ads, and all of a sudden, you know, your ratings go up.
It's how Nancy Grace got a show.
Yeah, yes. Let me take that back. Like it's not to say that there is not a tendency to create a summer of sharks, right? Like that is.
Hey.
Which by the way, I've thought a lot about. Yeah, you know that the summer of the shark was all cable news had before 9/11. Like that was the crappy show that they were trying to pitch just before they got the white hot diamond of success for cable news.
But at least it's not instant. Like at least it takes. You can criticize television news, and believe you me, I do it on the regular about being cynical in terms of driving certain stories. But and certainly there's enough of that that can fall on the shoulders of newspapers as well. But at least it's not instant. It's not like just immediately farming the outrage in real time.
Well, I mean, we could split hairs on that, but I mean, I think that in the 24-hour news cycle, we see, you know, so I was on Fox News Friday morning, right?
Yeah.
And this is going to sound, I had the same thoughts when, this is horrible. No, I had the same thoughts when we were looking at getting the cover of Magic Magazine. Yeah. I'm like, man, I hope nobody famous dies this month because I will get bumped and I won't get the cover. Well, somebody famous did pass away in Magic, but it was too late to get the cover, so I got the cover. Friday, I'm like, man, I hope nothing bad happens, obviously, because I hope nothing bad happens, but also that does. The news cycle for Friday is going to be all about the thing that happens. It's going to be all about the thing that happens because, you know, we before Twitter, before Facebook is, you know, that was the, what was the book? The cult, you know, Climate of Fear or whatever. It was just all about like news exists to scare us. News exists to scare us. And you look at when they have scare stories at work, you know, and things like that. And then when all of a sudden those narratives don't work, they try to find the next thing. But to your point, Justin, it's like, yeah, now you don't need, you know, people sitting in the newsroom making this stuff up. They just let us scare ourselves.
Yeah. And also it's like, and again, let me make this very clear. I have unlimited criticism for the culture of 24-hour news and cable news in general. I can go on and on about that, but like, it would be the difference of, oh, well, here's this awful thing that's happening. And instead of there being a, and I guess this does happen on cable news to a certain extent, of like, all right, well, let's bring these two people to argue. But then it really gets into a fight. And now they cancel all other news. And now they're just following these people fighting. And then other people jumping off, you know, it just turns into this gigantic Anchorman spectacle that now becomes its own self-feeding thing. And now let's bring in more people to think about, I don't know, was that a dirty blow that happened before? And here's another gigantic monologue about it. There's just like, there is a self-perpetuating element to it that is, I don't know. I don't know how healthy it is.
Yeah, I'm going to crit, and maybe it's out of place here too, but like, and again, I'm not going to pick on one news organization just to say, oh, they're the, at all, but like, you know, like 2 weeks ago, major news outlet put, you know, brought Richard Spencer on to give commentary.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, of all the people in the world, of all the university professors and book writers and people to talk about white supremacy and the problem of that and all of this, why did you bring him on? Why did you bring, you know, maybe because you're not known for like, you know, it was just frustrating. And I'm saying, I don't want to, and it's not out of the playbook for other news. I don't want to pick on one, but I was like, man, like this is part of the thing is like not outraged enough. We're going to outrage you. And I don't know.
Sure. I mean, there's no bad press, right? All press is
well, yeah, press. But I'm like, but he's a guy that nobody pays attention to until you put a microphone in front of him. He only exists because there's a microphone in front of him. And that's, I guess that's my complaint.
Sure. And that's the thing is that it's like, you know, it turns into that Bart Simpson meme where the entire class is, you know, turning around saying, say the thing. And then he says the thing and everyone reacts, right? It is like you are bringing that dude on camera to he might as well, for all intents and purposes, he's, you know, a Lawrence Welk act where he's spinning plates. Like, yeah. You know exactly what is happening. You know exactly what's going to happen. You know exactly what kind of furrowed brow you're expecting your anchor to say. And now the measure of the anchor is going to be how much you hold this guy accountable. And it's like, what is this really adding to the dialogue?
You know, in the 80s and the 90s, conservative groups would try to change what was on television and would protest. And they would create these councils or these groups and say, well, this parents group, instead of using Christian groups, Christian conservative groups. And they said, let's get rid of the name Christian out of the group and we'll call ourselves the such and such family group or whatever. And you'd see these people on talking heads and stuff. And you'd find out it was, you know, one guy working out of his office. You know, he didn't have this vast membership. They didn't have this stuff, but it was a talking head and it gave them an outsized representation. And we never knew that because the people putting the show together didn't want to point out, like, yeah, no, there's nobody, but it'll give us a great talking point.
I mean, like it would be the same as me going to speak about, you know, representing the Magic Symposium. Oh, the professor emeritus of the Magic Symposium is here to give his opinion on whether or not you should teach fire eating on television. It's like, well, what is the Magic Symposium? Well, it's me. It's a really good name that has the word symposium in it.
Sure.
Yeah, and that's the problem. And we don't know. And so you see other people who are, you know, stoking fear and hate and stuff like this. And you find out, like, yeah, no, they don't have a large group. They don't have this, you know, they have your microphone.
Well, and to bring it back to social media, like, there's not even that barrier anymore. It can just be any person getting quote tweeted by a large account. And then suddenly that person, whether they wanted to or not, whether they meant to or not, whether however much commitment they had in that tweet, suddenly becomes the other. There's a really good tweet. Every day, someone is the main character of Twitter, and you do not want to be the main character of Twitter.
Yeah, so true.
I think there will be, and then they fade. But then sometimes people like media can drag these people back up and say, let's, you know, this person now will become a thing. And you're like, well, I mean, you know, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm not advocating nobody should have a voice or whatever, but it just certainly, it's an industry that needs voices and needs to stoke our anger.
Well, damned if we didn't fix a lot about Twitter. You're welcome, Ev Williams.
Ev Williams.
Well,
is
yeah.
it Williams? Ev Lloyd? Well, what's, no, Ev Lloyd is
Jack
our,
Dorsey?
Our, No.
Jack Dorsey.
Yeah.
Jack Dorsey and Ev Williams. What's his last name?
There was an Ev. There was an Ev at some point, but yeah. Dorsey's the man now.
All right.
Ev Williams, you were right.
Oh, okay, good. I mean, it's not that it helped. Yeah. It was still an awkward thing to say. Well, apparently,
people know Jack, right? I think that's the thing. People know Jack.
Here's the good news, is that this platform, which oftentimes can result in sacrifice and suffering, is certainly not being run by somebody who deliberately puts himself through a multi-day fast and getting eaten up by insects and traveling around the world to put himself in the most uncomfortable positions that he can. Like, at least it's not something where he's projecting any kind of suffering and sadness out into the world. So it might make us better philosophically. Who knows?
I mean, I have no problem with the platform itself. And in fact, I don't think the platform should be policing stuff. I don't think, because that's a game that we see Osama bin Laden became an exile in Saudi Arabia because he was very critical of the crown of Saudi Arabia and had some, we'll call them horrific ideas, but maybe not particularly more horrific than was there. So he gets exiled. They kick him out of Saudi. There is no freedom of speech. There is none of that there. So what's your alternative when your speech makes you an enemy of the state and it's equal to, I don't know, becoming a violent terrorist? Maybe I'll become a violent terrorist. And so we took a guy who was a monster, you know, little monster, and that country exiled him, and he became a big monster because when your words were considered as bad as violent acts, then people will do violent acts.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that the question is necessarily the thing, the platform policing, but certainly creating a better way that you can enjoy the platform in the way that you want to enjoy it is a pursuit worth pursuing, I guess.
Well, yeah, and I guess my point is, let's not look to the people running the platforms to do that. Let's not look to them to, oh, they'll find this. They won't. They won't, as you pointed out. They're incentivized not to. And I'm saying, like, yeah, let's look inwardly and go, like, okay, maybe I don't need to be yelling shut up as loudly. Maybe I can just ignore. Maybe I can hear things that are controversial or stupid or whatever. And I don't have to build, I don't have to feed the outrage machine because whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It's idealistic, but.
All right, gentlemen, I got to go do show prep pretty soon. My pick is, again, it's The Boys. That was my pick, and if you thought you heard Andrew picking it, you're wrong, because it's my pick.
My pick is, again, Andrew Main's Ghost Diver, because I like my friend, and I don't pick other things other than my friend's program.
Well, which is why I picked The Boys, because my friend Dan Trachtenberg directed the pilot.
And my pick again is about 5 minutes about a video game no one on this podcast is going to play.
And my pick is, if you haven't seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, go out and see it.
Yeah, that's a movie I've liked more and more.
That movie has grown on me as the distance between the misery of having watched it has widened. And I mean that sincerely. I know that that's a little bit weird, but
I mean, I still think most of that movie is really good.
Right? Like those long lingering scenes that went nowhere. They kind of sit nicely.
Brian, actually, I've now become more and more of an apologist for even those scenes.
Oh, really?
I've slowly morphed into more and more, because the more I kind of grok kind of the larger story, the more I'm like, you want to know what? Like, yes, they were really long, but like they all did reinforce a thing that like really ties up and did a thing.
Well, and
you want to know what that I didn't realize? Because I knew that there were a few like famous kids that were cast in the Manson family. I didn't realize that it was like all of them. Like that there's like seven or eight like kids of famous actors.
Yeah, isn't Kevin Smith's really? Daughter Harley Quinn Smith
Kevin
in there?
Kevin Smith's daughter Mia Hawke, who was in Stranger Things season 3, she's in there. Of course, Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman's daughter. I didn't realize that the main chick that seduces Brad Pitt onto the ranch is Andie MacDowell's daughter,
Lena Dunham.
No, Lena Dunham is the mama bear in the Moo Moo.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I saw Gypsy on the IMDb and thought, oh, I remember that name.
No. She's the one who's like just manic energy 17-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's the one that was hitchhiking that brings Brad Pitt to the and gives
Margaret Qualley.
Sure.
Possibly.
Yeah. Wait. What?
Maybe.
Oh, yeah. The lady. Yeah. Pussycat. The chick who plays Pussycat.
Yeah.
She was great.
I thought she was great too, yeah.
Well, it's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.